You know, the music business can be mighty cruel. It can be cold and hard. You can put your life, your heart, and your soul into it, and it'll take it and just piss it out on the floor. Tonight, we're going to present a band who had every chance in the world to make it and just couldn't get there. We'd like to explain a little bit about why they didn't get there. Tonight I have a good friend of mine that spent all, I would say, 3 years trying to make this band work, Mr. Jim Cantelli, who is now owner of ESI, correct, Jim?
ESI Events.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about this band called Rastus. They were from Cleveland, Ohio. And we're going to examine them and let you hear their music, because they had some great music. And they were one of the greatest live bands I ever had the privilege to work with. So tonight, we're going to examine the reasons why Rastus never made it. First, we're going to take a little trip down I-75.
Come to me, cousin, and look in my eyes. I'm high as a blizzard on the 4th of July. If living don't kill me, I'll know it's a lie. The devil is waiting, it's my turn to cry. Yeah! I stand here before you with pain in my heart. I know what's happened, it pulls me apart. Apart from me, ever so few.
Well, Jim, it just happens to be a song that I wrote. You remember that?
I sure do, John.
That was a long time ago, Jim.
Yes, it was, good buddy.
1969, was it? Somewhere around in there? Was it
around 69, yeah, 69, because I think I met you in 69.
In 1969.
I know I was on the road with the Outsiders in 68 because I saw a picture with the date stamped on it the other day.
Oh, okay. So that's how you recollect time.
That's how I recollect time. I got to look back at the photo. Let's go to the photos, Johnny.
Absolutely. Well, Jim and I have known each other since 1968 or 69, and whatever it is, that's a long damn time. We've been friends for forever, it seems like, and when we were on the road together, we roomed together. Actually, there were three of us that roomed together. It was Jimmy, myself, and Smokey Smelko, who was the drummer of Rastus. And they called it, what was the name of it?
The Intellectual Room.
Oh, that's right. It was called the Intellectual Room. How could I forget? But anyway, we're talking tonight about a band called Rastus. They were from Cleveland, Ohio. And this band went through more changes, through more name changes, through personnel changes, lead singer changes, guitar changes. And we want to run by you tonight a little bit about the makeup of the band and talk about some of the players in the band and some of the reasons why they seemed to run afoul. They kept running aground all the time.
I think they were their own worst enemy.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jimmy. I think they were their own worst enemy. So let's start off with... I remember getting a call in Detroit. I was living in Detroit at the time, and I got this call, and these people were going to come and visit me and wanted me to listen to a band that they had some interest in. And so I'll let Jimmy pick this up because Jimmy is good at this story.
Well, it all starts with a record that the band cut. Actually, it starts before that. I had met the band in about 1969. I was on the road with a group called the Outsiders that had a couple hits, and we would meet at a hotel called the Versailles Inn in downtown Cleveland so that we could leave on our tour bus. And on one of those days that we were leaving, I happened to see this guy carrying a bunch of pizzas, and I recognized him as Fat Ange, Big Ange, I should say, from the neighborhood in
the neighborhood.
Cleveland. And Ange was a friend of Mike Geraci, the sax player in what was to become Rastus. And he and Ange were good buddies, and I knew Mike through my best friend at the time, Sonny Geraci, who was the lead singer in this hit band that I worked for, the Outsiders. And so I happened to see Ange in the hotel one day as the tour bus pulled in. We got off, and I was still wired up from the road, and I just saw Ange, and I said, "Hey, where are you going with all those pizzas?" And he said, "Well, we're giving a little shindig for one of the guys in Bakke's band." Bakke was the lead singer of what was then called the Fifth Amendment.
And Fifth Amendment, huh?
The Fifth Amendment, and that's what Rastus was called when I first met them.
They needed to take the Fifth Amendment.
They got the Fifth Amendment probably because they played all the wise guy clubs, and they were sort of well known among the wise guy circle. They had all the guys in the iridescent suits and Stetson shoes and the girls in the bouffant hairdos and all that stuff that used to hang out at their gigs.
No Stacy Adams wingtips.
Wingtips. Oh, no Stacy Adams. That was too uptown. They had the ones with the little, you know, white pencil stitching around.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, so...
So get to the story.
The story
get
is...
How did you get to my house?
we convinced them that they were a good band and that they needed to cut a record, which they did. They cut a song called Groovin' Is Easy.
Mike Bloomfield tune, right?
Yeah, I think it was a Electric Flag. Was he in the Electric Flag? Yeah, that's right. They cut the record, and they cut it at Cleveland Recording. Sonny Geraci helped out on the recording, and they had just met this trombone player named John Taylor, and he sat in on the sessions. And so somebody said, "Well, we need a producer, man, because we ain't getting it on our own." So a friend of mine, Frank Creamy, who was Big Ange's brother, who had been our equipment guy with the Outsiders, he and I conspired to find the band a producer. So Frank Creamy knew somebody who knew somebody who knew John Reese, and a call was made, and next thing you know, we all chip in and rent a car. Myself, Big Ange, Sonny Geraci, and Bucky, the lead singer, and Mike Geraci, we rent a car, and we drive to Detroit to meet this big-time record producer.
That is funny. Go ahead.
It was the middle of winter, and it was kind of a cold ride, but we had things to keep us warm.
Oh, yeah.
On the ride. We get to this guy's apartment.
Mother of herb.
mother of something, man.
Yeah.
We knock on the apartment door of this big record producer, and he takes us in, and we sit down, and we proceed to listen to the record and cut up as the band was wont to do. And at the end of it, John seemed to be interested, and we had made arrangements for you to come into Cleveland to hear the band.
On Tag Airlines.
On Tag Airlines across Lake Erie, the same airlines that killed Otis Redding, I might add.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was one particular incident that happened at the end of that that little meeting we had at your apartment that I don't know if I should relate or not.
Go ahead. You can tell. We're all clean now, boys and girls. But this is late 1968, I think it was.
In 1968, and it was actually, in all honesty, I have to say that it was the times. And
the
there
end
was
peer, of the summer of love.
There was peer pressure to do all this stuff.
Absolutely.
So,
we were forced.
We did inhale. That's all I can say. Unlike our former president, we did inhale. And we inhaled about an entire salad bowl full of whatever it was we were inhaling. And as we were leaving, we had all agreed that we were going to get together and we were going to fly Mr. Reese in to come and hear the band live, because that was their big selling point, that they were a good band live. So we all march out to the car. We get in the car, start it up. Sonny Geraci, my old cohort, and I are going, well, we need something for the ride back. Let's go talk to this guy, you know.
This goof.
This guy. So Sonny always needed somebody to, like, be his co-signers, and that was the designated co-signer in those days. So I followed him two steps behind to John's door, knocked on the door, and Sonny proceeds to ask John for a little more of the hair of what bit us.
Hair of the dog.
So John passes out this little toothpick out the door, and we kind of look at John and go, yeah, thanks, man. You know, and we get about halfway down the path to the car, and Sonny turns around and goes, who's this guy kidding? There's five of us here. You know?
You forgot the two important words.
Be careful is what John said as he handed us this toothpick. So we get in the car, and we hit the freeway, and we're getting ready to head south and make that big left turn down I-90 to go back to Cleveland from Detroit. And we were kind of having so much fun, we had to pull off the road.
You were laughing, I understand.
We were laughing. We were laughing hysterically. I was driving the car, and I don't think I could feel the pedals.
You couldn't feel the pedals. It was good stuff, Ira.
And it started to snow, as I recall, and there was already snow in my vision, but this was real snow.
But we don't do that anymore, Jim. Remember?
We don't do any of that stuff.
We don't do that.
And I've been clean and straight since 1980, and I would recommend that to anybody.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because we were kind of peer pressured at that time. Everybody was doing it, and you had to do it to be
cool.
That's
right, or you were a goof.
Yeah, you don't have to be cool anymore because you know who you are.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the band, as it stood in the beginning, was Don Nagy on bass.
Don Nagy on bass.
Smokey Smelko on drums.
Correct.
Vic Wakuski on saxophone.
Correct.
Mike Geraci on saxophone.
Correct.
We forgot that Don Nagy also played trumpet.
Also played trumpet.
That's right.
And bass at the same time.
And bass at the same time. And Tony Correa was the guitar player.
At that time, I think they may have had Tony in the band at that time, but they were, if not, they were in the midst of transitioning from this really sweet black kid from the neighborhood named George.
Just
who,
a second.
Who was?
Just a second. You've just said an oxymoron.
What did I say?
Sweet black kid from the neighborhood.
Well, from another neighborhood.
Oh, okay.
Not from. Well, for future reference, when we refer to the neighborhood, we refer to the neighborhood that Ange and the boys were from.
And the name of that neighborhood is?
Murray Hill.
All
it was
right.
A very well-known Italian neighborhood in Cleveland that was, a haven for, the lawless.
Yes, absolutely. I remember being chased out of there myself.
Yes. It was not a neighborhood that even our friend George could go to at that time. You forget that was about the time of civil rights, and people were very closed-minded in those days.
Yes, they were.
Except for those few of us that inhaled.
That's right. If you had long hair, you were a hippie freak, and you were liable to get shot. I mean, I literally got beat up a couple times because of it. Yeah.
Well, they used to take guys like us and I have an Italian last name, so I was sort of welcome as long as I kept my cool. But they would take guys like us and kidnap them and take them for a ride and cut their hair and not hurt them, but cut their hair and throw them out of the car and
at
say, let that be
an
a
hour,
warning.
Right? Throw them out the car at 80 miles.
Well, they would slow down to maybe 60.
Look, he bounced once. Oh, no, he bounced twice. Hey.
But I myself have not been a victim of that because, I was still Mrs. Cantelli's little boy at that time, and I had a lot of friends.
You did.
But I know people who did get their heads shaved and thrown out the car.
Oh, well, I'm glad it wasn't me, to tell you the truth.
So it's a different world.
It is a different world today, yeah. Jim. We can grow our hair as damn long as we want, right?
That's exactly right.
And no one says a word much.
Not much. Not unless you're trying to get that big job at IBM. But,
that's true.
I don't think
they care anymore either. You know, it doesn't really make any difference.
Yeah, well, I don't know what your listener base is out there, man, but, at least put it in a ponytail, you know?
Right. So now we have this band. We got five guys. And we have a lead singer.
And that, hence the term Fifth Amendment.
Fifth Amendment,
the Fifth
right.
Amendment. The lead singer was...
Bakke. Of one time, Bakke and the Visions in Cleveland, Ohio.
Local hero.
Absolutely. And he was quite famous in Cleveland. So Bakke had a couple minor hits, I reckon, right?
Yes, he did.
And... Jesus, you sick people should stay home. Anyway, so now we have six people in the band.
Now we have six people, and it becomes the Sixth Amendment.
The Sixth
Amendment.
What the hell is the Sixth? I know what the Fifth is.
Well, the Fifth was, we all know what the Fifth was, yeah. And since they played the Wise Guy Clubs, it was appropriate. But the Sixth Amendment was just a way of adding a guy in the band and not losing the amendment title.
And then next thing I know, it was the Seventh Amendment.
It was the Seventh
Amendment. Who made it the Seventh Amendment?
John Taylor was
John
found
Taylor,
in Akron
right.
somewhere, the trombone player. And
found asleep on a park bench or something.
Yeah, he was actually sharing an apartment with a couple of interesting ladies.
Ah.
And he was stuck there. He was with a show band. And lost his gig and was stuck in Akron. He was a typical, I used to look at John and think of him as, I had long hair and I was a sign of the times, but I used to look at John as me, what I am now, only in the 50s. He was a beatnik, I was a hippie.
If I remember correctly, the only thing he had to his name was his trombone and a bowling ball.
And that's correct, and he had his change of underwear in his
that
trombone
was it.
Case.
My God. Trombone Tommy Taylor, or John Taylor, or Jangles Tarkington, as he would call himself on occasion.
On the day that he inhaled.
Why don't we play something from the Ann Arbor demo session? Ah, sinning for you, I made myself a dishonest man. Baki, Baki Boo. He did sing that song. We recorded this stuff in a farmhouse in Ann Arbor, Michigan. You remember that, Jim?
I certainly do, man. That was a great place.
Yeah, it sure was. I had recorded SRC in that farmhouse, and we did a whole bunch of stuff. It was a good room. It was an old, old farmhouse, probably a couple hundred years old at least.
Oh, at least.
Yeah.
You know what impressed me most about that place was the way it was set up, with each room being an individual instruments room.
Yeah.
And the drum room sort of being the central room, and everybody having a window into the other instruments room.
Yeah.
And having total isolation for all you recording nuts out there.
We used a crown board. And we use crown amps,
the ancient kind.
Yeah, DC 100s or 300s?
300, DC 300.
DC 300.
And I know that because I later used that same amplifier, which was at that time the workhorse of the industry. I used him for live PA.
Yeah.
And today they are still being used today.
They're great. Great
amps. And DC-150s are being used for things all the time.
And the microphones were from Electrovoice. Electrovoice had given us just a ton of microphones. You know, the ones you could drive nails with. What were they, RE-15s?
And that's about what you would do with them today.
Yeah, they were just great for driving nails. But, I mean, the stuff that you're listening to was recorded in this 300-year-old farmhouse across from a mini mall with a supermarket.
With the floors that leaned. And,
oh, yeah.
And nothing was level in that house. Nothing was plumb.
No.
And it was just an old hippie house with, a bunch of rooms and, like I said, isolation for each instrument, which was very cool at the time.
I remember the time when Tony came in and he goes, I'm hearing something in the wall, scratching in the wall. And it was possums. Remember that?
Yeah.
Possums and their babies in the wall. So anyway, now we're in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We got no money. And... you know, it's tough for these guys to eat. Now, I live in Detroit. I'm married. I'm making records there. I'm getting paid. But these poor guys had no money. They had come on a wing and a prayer, coming in a bunch of different cars, and were sleeping on the floor in sleeping bags. And I remember, who was it in the drum room?
I think it was Angelo and Tony in the drum room.
Yeah.
And Vic and I had a room upstairs, and Taylor had a room upstairs somewhere. And Smokey, I forget where he was at that time. That was prior to you and he and I moving in together. That was another house, which we'll talk about
later. We will get to that later.
Yeah.
There was a lot of strange stuff that happened in this farmhouse, and we cut some great music. And I must say that these guys, for all the hardships they had, they went to the wall.
Well, you have to understand that the band started out as a club band, playing, like I said, these wise guy joints, and that's what they were, joints.
Yeah.
And they at that time were working a lot locally. And we're all kind of living above their means, kind of like to keeping up their front with the wise guys. They were all driving big Oldsmobiles and Cadillacs at the time. And when my friend Mr. Reese here came in, you know, he kind of got them to peek over the walls of the neighborhood and really see what was out there and what was happening in the Love Generation. A few of us had been exposed to it marginally, and... but these guys were used to playing the clubs with suits and, you know, and wise guys with pinky rings, you know.
Wise guys and shark skin suits. Right?
Yeah, kind of like the 60s version of The Sopranos.
Nicky Minetti.
Well, you kind of got them to open up a little bit and you know, kind of expand themselves and really learn how to play hard and give everything to what they did.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Prior to that, they were lazy. They were club guys who would come out and do and pace themselves to do 3-4 sets a night and were used to people sometimes listening and sometimes trying to hit on women and sometimes just hanging out. But you and I had been with a hit band, so I knew what it was like to get out there and push them into doing giving it all to that one performance.
150%.
Yeah, and you, I didn't have to say a word. I mean, you were there long before I got to say anything about it, but you and I both subscribed to the same ethic at that
time. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, so we're in this farmhouse and we're trapped in there, and we're there about a week or 10 days, and we're in there just cutting stuff and going insane
and barbecuing.
Barbecuing, and you know, I know that a couple of the guys weren't supposed to leave the farmhouse, but a couple of guys took off back to Cleveland,
and
right?
They missed their mommies. They missed their girlfriends,
right,
and wives after about 2 days. And snuck off back to Cleveland in the bass player's car and never told anybody. I was kind of privy to it, but being the good slave that I was at the time, and being part Sicilian, I was sworn to Omerta.
Omerta, absolutely. Let's find another cut. How about a little El Congo Valiente?
I know she's mine, and yet I must set her free, leave her be. Goodbye, my love. Goodbye, my love.
One of my favorite songs.
Well, you wrote it.
You had to step on that line, didn't you?
I certainly did.
I wrote that.
You didn't think I was going to let you get away with it.
As a matter of fact, I wrote that song in a booth at Nagel's. You remember Nagel's, right?
Oh, certainly.
Oh, yeah. How could anyone forget Nagel's?
I had some memorable experiences in that place.
So did I. Actually, my memorable experiences were outside in the parking lot, but that's another story.
Well, that's another show. Entire show.
I'll never forget that. Actually, I would like to forget it, but I can't because one night I had the blues, and I was sitting at the bar, and I'd had two or three blackjacks and I think a couple of those little red pills.
Once again, kids, don't try this at home.
That you guys used to give me all the time to keep me under control. Anyway, I started feeling real dizzy, and in the basement of Nagel's is where the club was, and I went upstairs, and I went outside into the. It was very cold outside, and it had snowed, and next thing I know, I wake up and I'm back at the house. Now, Jimmy can fill in the in-between. What happened, Jimmy?
Well, actually, I was out getting some air myself and followed shortly thereafter by the lead singer of the band at the time. And we saw this body laying under the wheel of a pickup truck out in the parking lot, and we decided to go over and investigate. And it turns out that... as well as a body, there was a wallet lying about 5 feet away from his head. And I guess I bent over to pick up the wallet and saw that it was my good friend here's wallet. And, put two and two together and figured out that the body and the wallet went together.
Yeah.
And the lead singer at the time, who comes in later in our story, his name was Mark Roman. And He and I picked John up and put him in the back of a car and took him home and, bedded him down and...
Let me sleep it off.
Let him sleep it off. What a lightweight.
Oh, yeah. I was a lightweight. I'm still a lightweight, man. I tell you what,
I'm a no weight, John. Yeah. I do nothing. I don't even take aspirin unless
I know.
I have
We've
to.
All straightened our act up, thank God, because I almost died in 1994 from abuse of... just too many things and abuse of my life. But that, like I said, that's another story. So Nagel's was actually the first place that I saw the band play live. And dump is...
it was an interesting place. Nagel's was on the edge of where the city and the neighborhood ended and the suburbs began. So consequently, you got people from all walks of life in there. You got the neighborhood guys, the wise guys. You got the club hoppers, the kids who were just drinking age, and there were several colleges around. So you got a lot of college kids. It had people from all walks of life, which made it so interesting. And the place was just the place that when John came in the first time to work with the band, he told them that we needed a place to rehearse, and, you know, it was just fate. They were playing the club a couple times a week, and most of the couple of the guys in the band were from the neighborhood, and they knew the owners, and they were given the place during the day. They had the run of the place to rehearse in, you know, to the point of where people would just walk behind the bar and shoot themselves a Coke, and, it was like somebody's living room.
It's very nice of the people. Who were the people that owned the...
There were two guys that owned it. One guy's name was Wally, and the other guy, his name escapes me right now, but they were both from the neighborhood.
Were they Italian gentlemen?
They were a couple of Italian guys from the neighborhood, and they were just trying to make a go of it. The place was really kind of like a neighborhood tavern, with a big basement that they turned into a funky club.
Yeah, it was funky. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the dance floor, people used to sit on the dance floor and watch the band. And at night, I mean, it'd be so acrid and so thick with pot smoke in there, man. You didn't have to smoke a joint. You'd get a buzz just walking in the place.
I remember one night there was a scare in the place. Somebody said the FBI was coming down, and the place just emptied in like seconds. And you got to understand, again, it's a historical note. Back in those days, during the Nixon administration, people, certain government agencies kept an eye on the colleges and the kids with long hair because, we were making a lot of trouble. We were challenging everybody.
You were troublemakers.
We were challenging everybody, and they were challenging back.
Yeah, but Nagel's was a great place to break this band in. And it was funny because every time I see that picture on the back of that first album, I mean, it's like the band is like crammed onto this little tiny bandstand. You know, all these gorillas on top of this little tiny bandstand.
You can't even see the drummer in the picture because he's hidden in the corner.
I know. Can't even see Smokey, but you can certainly hear him. We're going to play a cut now called Black Cat, which will really let you hear Smokey Smelko. This is a live cut from The Scene in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we're going to send this out especially to Miss Benedetta Balistrieri.
Mother.
Live from the scene of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 1969, the band is called Rastus. The show is The Best Music You Never Heard. Click on part two.